Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening to a cold, rainy night in Myrtle Beach. This is Dr. John with Pop Culture Stars, and boy, do we have a great show for everybody tonight. It's going to be warm and fun in here as I'm drinking. I got my new favorite. I quit drinking ginger ale. I drink this blackberry naturally flavored sparkling water with other natural flavors. That's what worries me, is those other natural flavors. But it's really pretty good, and I like it. It'll keep me going. So anyway, great to be here. And all I got to say is I may date this podcast for eternity, but on May 17th, for God's sake, racing comes to Darlington, South Carolina. NASCAR is back. COVID virus, we're going to try to say get out of here. So I am so looking forward. I'm going to be there, and it's going to be a blast. So thank goodness this part of South Carolina has got some great entertainment, be it Myrtle Beach or be it NASCAR in Darlington, just some of the greatest stuff in the world. So you are talking to one excited boy. Our other co-hosts tonight that we're always glad to have with us, well, we claim we're always glad to have this one. No, we're glad to have him. Here he is from Jacksonville, North Carolina. That's correct. Dave Atwell, how are you doing, sir?
Hey, I'm doing real good.
We're glad.
Still celebrating the birth week as I turned a big 5-0 this past Saturday. So we're halfway through birth week and enjoying it. Had a real good time. About out of gas, though, from all the working and running around and everything. And as I was about to enjoy a malt beverage and a cigar on the deck, as I normally do, started feeling raindrops falling on my head. So I had to rethink everything in the last 2 minutes. And that's why I fell silent in the green room, because I had to move everything around. So now I'm out here on the porch waiting for the rain to fall, with no delicious cigar from Godfather Cigars and no cold malt beverage with a blue ribbon on it in my hand. So, by God, we will get around it and we will persevere. But, yeah, everything's going great, and looking forward to tonight's show.
Absolutely. And from Studio I in India, Indiana, the farthest, most northern reaches of our galaxy. Here he is from Indianapolis, Todd. How are you doing tonight, Todd?
I am outstanding to supernatural and ecstatic to be here, gentlemen. Man, just loaded with all kinds of tangents to drive you nuts tonight. I want to start off with saying, Dave, happy 50th, brother. Welcome to the club. I don't know if you saw it, but on the Pop Culture Stars page, you know, now that you turn 50, you've got a particular procedure coming, medically speaking. I think a particular television proctologist got a picture of him posted there. He's waiting to have an appointment with you.
Yes.
Good old Jack Elam from the Cannonball Run, baby.
Yeah. In my profession, I rarely need more than this. Smack, smack, smack. But, I've been saying to colonoscopy and beyond all week long. But, it's going to take an awful lot of damn coaxing to get me to go ahead wantingly walk in there and do it. So, yeah. Yeah. Sooner or later, it'll go down, but no.
Sooner or later, love's going to get you, right, Dave?
Yeah. I mean, now, if they say they're going to play Lou Rawls music through the whole procedure, then I might be a little more inclined, but
just be careful if you ask for one finger or two.
Yeah.
speaking of that comment, here he is from Alabama, our representative from The Walking Dead. Dave, that's enough about you. Our representative from The Walking Dead, Kevin Holland. How are you doing tonight, other than ready to have some fun and laugh, right?
Man, I'm enjoying it, and happy late birthday and to Dave. And I'm excited to be here like always, sitting here enjoying the weather. It's turned out to be rainy most of the week, but it's been a nice one today, so just enjoying it.
Well, that's good. And as I was saying a little earlier, right in the green room before we were getting on, I was going to say we were going to send a sympathy card to one of the prettiest ladies in the universe, and that is Dale Atwell, the wife of Dave Atwell, just so we can let her know that we're thinking about her as she has to put up with Dave, but we still love her. Hey, Dave, we need to get Dale on the show sometime and talk to her a little bit. I think that would be fun. Don't you, Todd? Yes.
Look, I told you a long time ago, I think we should have, you know, that whole pop culture stars and wives thing on the show. I was thinking, you know, we could get Mr. Lessie on as well. There's a few others that I think would just make a heck of a fun show.
Well, I think it would too. We got a lot of pop culture icons that are friends of ours. So Todd, we're going to talk about this we're going to do this in about a month. So anyway, we're just glad everyone's here. Now tonight we are very fortunate. I am involved. And I've been involved far too long, but not that I'm unhappy about it. But I've been involved for a long, long time on putting together the biography of one of the greatest musical groups of the last century. And I think when you look at the top 10, it has to include Led Zeppelin, the Beatles. It has to include maybe not the Dave Clark Five, but certainly the Rolling Stones. It would have to include the Temptations. It would have to include the Supremes. And it would have to include, from Atlanta, Georgia, the mighty, mighty Tams. One of the greatest R&B singing groups in the history of our great world. And tonight, we have the pleasure, the first of two interviews, with the road manager and manager of the Tams for 40 years. He knows all the stories. He knows, Dave, you know where they're all buried. Here is Coach Dave Crawford with the Tams. How are you doing, Dave? And I bet you know where all the skeletons are, don't you?
I hope you. Yes, sir.
That's okay.
All
the good and all the bad. Well, there's a lot of good. And, you know, you told a story to me yesterday, and I think that story will perfectly set the tone for tonight's interview with you. It was about a gentleman and his son who came to hear the Tams at a benefit for a hospital. You remember that story you told me?
Yes, sir.
Please start us off with that story, because our hosts tonight need to hear that. They need to hear just how much the mighty Tams meant. And just before you get started, I'm going to let everybody know, in case you can't quite remember, they were the gigantic group that did Be Young, Be Foolish, Be Happy. They did What Kind of Fool Do You Think I Am? They did that huge hit in England called Hey Girl, Don't Bother Me. They did I've Been Hurt, which is absolutely one of my favorite R&B songs in history. So I know we've all heard them. We've all loved them. And Coach Dave Crawford, and you know what? I am so happy. I was given Coach's phone number from Diane Pope, Charles's wife, and now I got a new buddy here in Myrtle Beach. I've known Coach for 15 years. So, Coach, again, I'll stop talking. Tell us this great story, because that'll get us started off right. This is how important the Tams are and have been to people down here in their home country of the South.
Well, and it's my favorite story, John, but we were playing a show, and I still, Diane and I talked about it yesterday. I still cannot remember the name of the Tams. We played it like 3 years in a row. This particular time was a fundraiser for a hospital. I do remember the tickets were $50. It was outside. And I'm sitting at the merchandise table. And here comes this little tiny man. He was clothes were raggedy and dirty and had on scuffed up shoes and had a little boy with him. I'd say probably 5 years old. And
hey, Coach, can you talk? Can you talk just a little bit louder for us?
Okay, hold on. I'm gonna try something here. Hold on a second.
All right.
Okay, can you hear me?
Sure, that's better. Thank you.
Okay. All right, anyway, I'm setting up the merchandise table, and here comes this man, this little boy, and he said, "Sir, are you with the Towns?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Can I ask you a favor?" And I said, "Sure." And he said, "Do you mind me and my son standing in front of Mr. Charles when he's singing?" And I said, "No, that's great." I said, "He'll be on this microphone plus when I'm in." And he said, "My son has never seen the Tams, and I've talked to him about it his whole young life. And I've always wanted to see him, and this is the only chance we've ever had." And I said, "Well, you stand right there and call him to be there." So the band does this set, call the Tams on. And sure enough, the man and his son are standing right in front of the front, looking up at him. And this, the Tams are very entertaining and very audience friendly. They get off the stage and run through the crowd singing. And Charles was 70 years old at the time, was still jumping off stages and whatnot. So when he came off stage, the man was always calling through the crowd. And then he'd work his way back to the stage, and they'd be right in front of him again. Now, when the show was over with, Charles got mobbed, which was a commonplace thing then because he was only original. He left with the original. And here comes this little man and his son, and some were crying. And our son was crying because, you know, he didn't understand his dad was crying. And he said, "Sir, I just want to thank you for letting us stand in front of Mr. Charles." I said, "So that one, that's no big deal." He said, "Oh, yes, it is." He said, "Elvis Presley was a national superstar, an international superstar. But he said, in the South, Mr. Joe and Mr. Charles and the Towns, they were our Elvis Presley." And crying the whole time he's talking to this man. He stood right there for a while. He said, "Do you think I can talk to Mr. Charles?" I said, "Sure." And we still, you know, we still all kind of in rebellion. We had to 8 by 10 color photo, and I gave one to each of to him, his son each. And he said, "Sir, I don't have any money." And I said, "This one's on me." And I gave him a Sharpie. And I said, "Go on back there and talk to Charles." And Charles probably talked to him for maybe 20 minutes. And they came, finally, they finished talking. He went back to the dressing room. Here they come right by me, and they're still crying, but they had a big smile on their face. And that told me all I needed to know about how people felt about the Tams in the South.
That's a great story, and it just says how important the Tams were to so many people of all races, of all of everything. They were great. I remember I made a number of wonderful friends through the Tams just by talking to them. There was a group of alumni from East Carolina that would come down here all the time. They actually had a wine shop, and they've got some apartments down here still. And I still hang out with them occasionally when they come down. But I have a CD from one of them that had passed away, and I cherish it a lot. And because we started talking about the Tams and how we all became friends. So, you know, Tams have done a lot of great things. Charles, would love to have Charles here. But, Coach, let me ask you something. A lot of people say there was more than one group of the Tams. And could you explain that to everybody? Because it's kind of an interesting story, don't you think?
I do. And before, and you probably don't even know this, of course, the Tams were from Atlanta. And there's a group out of Hendersonville, North Carolina, started going around calling themselves the Tams. And we had the name Tim Martin, and that got shut down immediately. That didn't last very long. But anyway, we had a big Silver Eagle bus, and we always met at Kroger off Highway Interstate 20 in Atlanta. And everybody showed up. Well, some of the guys, well, most of the guys, left because they hadn't been paid 7 weeks. And Otis, who was the road manager, he was Charles and Joe's brother. He never sang, but he was a road manager. And they got into it, and Robert Lee, who was original, Sonny, who was an original, Charles, who was Lewis. And we went on and played the time without them. But anyway, I stayed with Joe because, you know, Joe was not the best of health, and he had some problems, you know, alcohol-wise and whatnot. And it was nothing against Charles or Robert Lee or any of them. I loved them all. But I kind of stayed with Joe. Never was, you know, I knew. As a matter of fact, I went on a road with them at one time. But that's what, and it was actually, it wasn't the book that just followed out of Nashville. It's some money got in the wrong hands, and it's a long story, but we got it all settled, and Charles and Little Red came back, and Robert kept his own group, and you know, at that time, I was scared, and I loved it, and Charles said, don't worry, the best group will win in the end, and I was like, same thing, and it was, we worked right at 100 days a year. Robert Lee, and I, you know, I like Robert Lee. He worked one day this last year, one day the year before. So, I mean, you know, really had a problem for us. But, you know, time marches on. And so now we got three little fans in addition to other fans. We got three young ones. So we just going to keep trucking.
Well, that's great. I know that all you guys do remember a lot of the great R&B bands that we had, a lot of them toward the Southeast. I mean, even you know, the Temptations, which were, and the Temptations and the Platters, they weren't especially from down here in the South, but they did come around here. And do any of you have any memories of when you were younger than you are now? Even Dave, we know Dave can be younger than 50, but and Kevin, we don't know how old you are. We'll figure that out one day. But the point is, we will. I was just wondering, do what?
I said I'll
What'd
never
you
tell.
You'll never tell. Okay. Well, don't. You know, I'm 147, and I think I look great for 147. But anyway, back to going out and partying when you were a kid, and I know everybody went to the beach. Did any of you have the opportunity to see the Tams or any of those great beach music groups that toured the Southeast during the summertime at your beaches, whether they were in Alabama or in North or South Carolina? I'm going to start with Todd, then I'm going to go to Dave, then I'm going to go to Kevin. Todd, did you ever have a chance to see any of these great beach music bands live and in person?
Oh, sure did not. The fact I never went to South Carolina until 1985, and the only place I got to see there was the wonderful facilities there at Paris Island. So, you know, that was a whole different atmosphere in the summer of 85. But
I bet it was.
I sure do remember growing up with AM radio. And, you know, that's what it is. There was a lot of people understood harmonies and melodies back then, music-wise. And to say it, R&B today ain't what R&B was yesterday.
Or in 85, I agree, but you remember that great music back then, and I'm sure you had to hear the Tams on the AM radio a time or two, right?
Oh, most definitely. I went ahead and pulled up just to get my head right on who was doing what, and I was like, oh, my goodness, I know this. We're just, dude, that's, you know, that's the whole thing. When music was music, I'm going to tell you, that's, and, yeah, well, you know, I don't know, the weekend for sure, you know, I know a lot of the stuff became Motown and all that, and remember training on Saturdays and all that until some of that music changed. The I'd wax nostalgic on that stuff because there was that whole people that can't do Harmon Crabbe and Watts. I mean, I can't. I was always jealous of all y'all that could pull that stuff off. That's the way that is. Now, let me slide something in here. We're going to be looking to see a text from our Queen of Sparkle here. She's unloading groceries, said she was going to be joining us shortly.
I got news for you. I was waiting until you were done because the Queen of Sparkle has now joined us. Miss Liz Brackett, how are you doing tonight?
Hello, my fellows. I have missed you guys so much.
We miss you.
How are you guys doing?
How are you?
We're great.
How have you guys been?
We are very blessed to have the manager of one of the greatest musical groups in history, Coach Dave Crawford of the Tams. He is here with us, and we're just I was just asking everybody, did they ever get to the beach? Did they ever get to hear R&B music back when they were of age, which is not like 19 to 25? That's really of age down in the Southeast. And do they ever remember the Tams? It's okay if you don't. I mean, you're gonna remember them after this great interview. So Miss Liz, did you ever get to the beach when you were when we call it a kid, 18 to 25, and get to enjoy some of that great Carolina beach music?
Let me just cut this one off real, real quick. You see, I am so pale. People call me Casper. I get moonburnt. For me, the beach and I don't really get along very well. I love the beach at nighttime in the winter.
Okay.
So more than likely, I probably haven't had the experience that most 18, 19-year-old kids do at the beach because I avoided it. I went to the mountains, and I would do, like, whitewater rafting. So, unfortunately, not exactly the right audience. I totally get the vibe, and I have a lot of friends that have. But me personally, not so much, mostly because it's not my thing. But it's cool. I love the music.
Well, that's great. So glad you do. And I want to personally introduce Coach Dave Crawford. This is Liz, the Queen of Sparkle. And Liz, the Queen of Sparkle, this is Coach Dave. So y'all say hello and we'll move forward.
Hey, Coach Dave, how are you?
I'm good.
Pleasure to meet you.
Turned 50, I got shoes over. Yeah. Well, Dave, you're a young man, buddy.
Oh, it's good. It's good for you. It's great. Being 147, I mean, I'm thrilled. I remember so much well past the War of 1812. You just don't know. But anyways, that number one, we're glad to have you, Liz. And so I have now officially introduced you to our guest. And now, the curmudgeon of the world, Dave Atwell. Did you get to the beach and hear some Carolina beach music when you were a kid? I don't know. Were you ever a kid? I don't know.
He was grown, by the way. He was born grown man.
He was born
a grown-ass man. He was born a grown man.
I am going to plead the fifth because I've spent just about my entire existence on the East Coast in one form or another, be it back home, Washington, D.C., or living in Paris Island as a kid or growing up. And raising my family here in North Carolina. I did spend 5 years in Chicago. So, you know, the beach music was not quite that big out there in Chicago. But by the time that whole period between my graduation and November of 95, when I met my lovely second wife, I don't have a whole hell of a lot of memories of anything. So I do remember getting down...
You did just have a birthday, though, didn't you? I think that might explain a lot.
Yes, it did. Yeah, I'm going to need to start taking that eucalyptus or whatever the hell it is that gets your mind back in shape. But, of course, I've worked so hard to kill off brain cells over the last 50 years. Why would I try to gain them back? But I recall being in Myrtle Beach. Gosh, I want to say it was in 93 somewhere. And I ended up at some beach music thingamajig.
Thing.
And to be quite honest with you, I was doing two things, getting loaded and dodging all the old drunk white guys out there shagging all over the place. And it was They were having the time of their lives, but I am ashamed of the fact that I just cannot remember who all was there and everything. But no, and you know, Beach Music is one of those things that it's unique to the area. I know, you know, when I go back home to Maryland and that kind of stuff, they're, despite the fact they're only, you know, 4 or 5 hours up the road, they're not really into all that. And, you know, you find out that a lot of it's almost, you know, sold to the Carolinas, but it's good music, it's good times, and the people who love the music, you know, like the story that Coach Dave opened up with, that kind of stuff right there. Any entertainer, whether you sing, write, act, or whatever, if you don't get totally floored by somebody who walks up to you and says those types of things, like, you know, Coach Dave was relaying on, then you're in it for the wrong reasons. And that was a great way to start the show off and everything. And, God, I just wish I knew more about the band and everything. And I will educate myself after this because you've got my ears perked up. But like I said, all those years in between graduating and meeting my lovely now wife, Dale, that saved me from self-destruction. And I say that with all my heart, because I wouldn't have made it without her, because I was on a crash course. But, yeah, I'm sure somehow or another I have heard the music and just cannot place it. But definitely we'll be looking that up.
Well, that's great. Coach, I'm going to ask Kevin, and then I'm going to get back to you with a couple of important questions. So, Kevin, did you ever get to hear any Carolina Beach music when you were down on the beach in Alabama, or were you listening to other stuff?
Man, I ain't even been to an Alabama beach. I always went down into Florida. We usually just go into, like, Destin or Panama City. You know,
oh, dude,
I can't even say that I've been to my own beach except for once that I was working, and most of the bands, I have seen several bands, but not really any big ones down there. A lot of them was just motel bands, groups that got together, and a lot of them you'd get lost in time just sitting there listening. There was some good groups out there, but, you know, a lot of them was just private.
Yeah, Coach, did you guys ever play on that western coast of Florida? I'll bet you did.
Oh yeah, many times. So we played a lot of places, but basically we play Alabama, Florida, North and South Carolina, Virginia, West Virginia, Kentucky. But we have ventured out. I mean, we played in Cincinnati. We played in Phoenix, Arizona. Goodness gracious, this just kills me to say this. We played in Hawaii. Days and I was still coaching football, and I couldn't go back. I've never been to Hawaii. Wanted to go all my life. Had a free trip, free condo, free buffet meals a day. I wouldn't even need to eat it, but I didn't get the group played 5 nights. We opened for George Benson one night, Smokey Robinson one night, and the Pointer Sisters one night. And I didn't.
I'd have figured out how to be sick, buddy. I'd have been sick. I know how to get
played sick. Las Vegas. I've never been to Vegas. And we played the show at Desert Inn with Association in Johns Rivers. And they'd never seen anything like the Tam team. The cooks came out of the kitchen watching the Tam. So it is a very high energy type deal. And they hadn't seen that. But, you know, it's been great. You know, but yeah, we play Florida a lot. Still play Florida a lot.
Yep, that's right. Now, were you with the? Did you go with the Tams over to England when they did Top of the Pops, the television show?
No, I didn't. That was before my time. I know all about it, but no, I wasn't with them at that time.
All right. Well, we'll forgive you on that one. We'll ask Diane about it. It was.
I promise you. I want the other guys to understand. Diane and I are the same thing. Together. It's not about me. It's really not about her. It's about the Tams. But she's like a sister to me. And, We talk almost every day, and she's a wonderful person.
Isn't it true that one of the Tams, that was a live show in front of everybody in Great Britain, and didn't one of the Tams kind of vanish from stage in the middle of the show?
I've been told that, yes.
Yeah, it got a little nervous, and so they just kind of like vanished. Yeah. Now when Liz is out filming a show for VH1 or whatever, they can't vanish from the set, can they, Liz?
If they do, then we've got a bigger fish to fry.
Well, by the way, I promise you.
Now, I have worked on a couple of ghost hunting shows, so if they do start disappearing for real, we're going to have some money in our hands, but it's going to be several months down the road.
And I'm a band too, so I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, kind of crazy. So, Coach, tell us another fun story that maybe you and I haven't talked about in the last week or so. You got one more good one for us?
Yeah, I think it's pretty good. We got a Silver Eagle bus, and our driver's name was Willie Poland, and Willie could drive forever. Wasn't a very good driver. He could drive for 10 hours at a time, I think. But we had to have a backup driver, and one time Willie got sick, and we had a roadie. His name was Melvin, but we called him Punkin, and Punkin couldn't read. So Willie was sick one night, so we let Punkin drive, and everybody on the bus was asleep. I don't remember exactly, but I couldn't sleep or anything moving, and I'd have to be after 2 or 3 days before I could finally close my eyes and get some rest. But everybody on the bus was asleep. And Pumpkin missed the exit and drove 75 miles north. So we had to turn around and come back. It was 150 miles out of the way. And it was like we were late. But I thought this was good. Pumpkin was going to drive on the side of the time. And the trumpet player sat across from me. And I raised my seat back and said, I'm going to try to get some sleep. He said, "Do you know who's driving?" I said, "Sure." I said, "Puckett's driving." He said, "Well, he can't read." And I said, "Well, we're going to be on the interstate for, 8 hours, so that's no big deal." He said, "Have you ever seen a sign that says bridge out?" I sacked my seat back up. We watched Puckett drive. That's the way I know he was like. So it was a very interesting thing. John, do you remember the old Time Life? You remember the Time Life things on TV? They had one.
I'm sorry, say that again. Do I remember what?
Things Time Life used to do on TV. They'd sell sets of things. And anyway, they had one on the Great Outlaws of the West. Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
Well, they did. And part of the commercial was they said John Wesley Harden was so mean, he shot a man for snoring. And we were riding along 2 or 3 in the morning, and I always sat up front by Joe. And y'all heard all the snoring going on. He said, "Coach, if John Wesley Harden come on this bus, he'd kill every one of you, son of a bitch." So, anyway.
That's
a lot of fun out there, man. It was quite an experience, needless to say. And I went from the time we left Atlanta to the time we got back. It was crazy. First trip I ever went on, we played in Chattanooga, Tennessee, with the Miami Sound Machine. Left there that night, drove straight through to North Carolina. People that owned the club and the restaurant we were playing in kind enough let me take a shower. So the show was over, we left and drove all the way to Norfolk, Virginia. And I just collapsed. When we got in the motel, I just collapsed on the bed. And it went 45 minutes. He comes over and said, "Coach, we got to get up and go to the show." And he said, "Bring your stuff. We're leaving, going straight back to Atlanta. The job tomorrow night got canceled." So I've been out 4 days and had a hotel room by about 15 minutes. So, it's a rough life, but I loved every minute. I didn't mind the traveling or anything.
Yeah, well, man. I'm glad that you like being on the road, because I know I've been on the road so much. In fact, I think everybody on this podcast tonight has been on the road. Kevin, you are constantly, when y'all are filming The Walking Dead, you are hammering your way from the midpoint of Arkansas, not Arkansas, the midpoint of Alabama up to Atlanta and back. How long of a trip is that one for you? And then we lose Kevin.
Maybe we lost. Yeah.
Well, we might have lost Kevin. He might have done whatever.
He sent out a run. Great show.
Okay, great. Well, now, Liz, have you done enough driving in your lifetime with your camera career and your showbiz career?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Matter of fact, I've done many a show with you guys on drives. I've been from here to New Orleans talking to you guys, from Pennsylvania to here. I've been from D.C. to North Carolina talking to you guys. I think I've even talked to you from Florida or Georgia up. I can't remember. But usually you guys are a pretty nice chill ride, you know, drive-back situation. I get to enjoy you guys, and the road doesn't seem so lonesome and long.
Well, that's good. Now, I'll tell you what, Liz. I just thought of my favorite Liz Brackett story.
Now, do you remember,
and I think you have to know what this story is.
There's so many now, I don't know which one specifically.
You were filming at a haunted
yes,
location.
Now, Liz, do I have clearance from you to tell that story?
Go right ahead. If I don't like it, I'll just start talking really loud.
Okay. All right. It was great. So,
this is the way we really are, just for the record, Coach. This is how we are.
This is it. I mean,
we've all got some darn
mini pop culture stories. I love this story, and that's why I want Coach to hear it. Well, first of all, so that everybody knows, in case you don't know, I run the South Carolina Lizard Man Festival, Tennessee and Georgia Bigfoot conferences. I'm a practicing paranormal investigator and a few other things, and I have many, many friends that do that. So I have the most wonderful, it is an incredible life. And Liz knows that. We've talked about many of my adventures and everything. So Liz said, now, John, I'm getting ready to go up and do a filming. I can't tell you what it's about, but it's a big deal. And I'm going to tell you all about it when I get done because you'll really like it. It was a paranormal show, of course. So I said, well, that's great, Liz. I can't wait. So it was in the middle of the week. We'd had our show. And it was, I think, the middle of next week. Now, Liz, you know where the story's going, don't you?
I've got a vague recollection. I like the way you're telling it. I don't have any reason to cut you off yet.
Okay, good. So Liz calls me up and she says, John, I know you talk about all this paranormal stuff. I'm having a little bit of a problem up here on set. And I said, well, Liz, what's the problem? And so Liz says, John, this place is getting dangerous. I think it's more than just haunted. I think there's some spirits around here that do not like us or me. I said, oh. So she said, well, what do I do? I said, well, it's real simple. You can do what I do. And I reach over here on my couch, and I always carry with me my maroon and gold New Testament Psalms and Proverbs Bible that I got from the Gideons. And whenever I feel threatened or concerned, because we do some pretty iffy shows now. I mean, we do scary casts and we do Murder 1-2-3, and it can get kind of claustrophobic in my one bedroom condo here. But it's, you know, it's all right. I got my Bible, and so I'm good to go. And I feel that my Bible protects me. And so I said, Liz, about the best thing you, other than resign from the job, because I know you don't want to do that. What you might want to do, just go get you a Bible. And that's probably about the best thing to solve all your problems. And Liz, kind of let me know. Okay, you remember this story now?
Oh, I remember the story. I do. I just remember saying, well, you know, the thing is, I'm not religious at all. I'm an atheist. Like, I believe in positive energy and negative energy, but, like, I don't own a Bible, and I don't feel a need to have one. So I kept telling him, I was like, well, look, you know, what do you suggest? I mean, I'm not a religious person, and you're the only expert that I know. Like, what do you suggest I do since I'm not religious,
and,
you know?
And so my one comment to her was this. I looked deep inside myself. I said, well, Liz, I guess from my viewpoint, that's going to be problematic. I didn't know what else to say. I said, but I'm going to pray for you. I swear I am. I'm going to pray for you. And it was like, you know, it was one of the most interesting conversations I've ever had. I cherish the moment when I had that conversation with you, Liz. I can see exactly where I was when we had that conversation. And do you know where I was?
Where were you? Because I know where I was when we had this conversation.
I was in Clemson, South Carolina, getting ready to walk into my old fraternity house to just see if they were alive or not. And I am in between these two dormitories at Clemson, and it was getting dark. And it wasn't exactly it was a little bit of a scary location. It was kind of weird that night. And you asked me that question. I said, I think that's going to be problematic. But I guess I'm going to pray for you, and I got to go. And then all of a sudden, here came these space aliens, better known as the 18, 19, and 20-year-old new members of my college fraternity at Clemson. They were scarier than anything you were experiencing, I'll tell you that. You ever hung out recently with any 19-year-olds? I swear they're space aliens.
Dude, I saw a handful of them at Target this evening when I was grocery shopping, and all I could see was a bunch of bros. I was like, dude, what? So, like, sometimes my wife and I, when we're talking, like, we'll be like, oh, I wonder, let's see what they're saying to each other, you know, and then I'll speak for one person, and she'll speak for the other person, and we'll just have, like, a funny little conversation. So I'm like, Chad, we can't ride with so-and-so. Why not? And then she would be like, well, because his car is not as new. It's Tyler's car. And he's only in our group, even though he's not cool, because he has a better car. Like, and we just, like, that's what they look like now. And they're tall, skinny. They look like they fell out the back of a Beach Boys truck, and then bam, and hit a millennial on the way down.
you know what? I just thought it was like Valley Girl meets millennial.
Yeah, except dudes.
Frightening.
Dude.
But to follow up with the Pennhurst situation, and, you know, I obviously can't just leave my guys hanging. Like, I'm not going to go to an insane asylum that has been shut down for about 15, 20, 30, I can't remember what year we're in now, so is it 2020 now? I think 50 years is what it is, or 70 or somewhere there. It's not been shut down long enough to establish that, you know, it's been shut down many a moon ago, but at the same time, it's been shut down long enough that it's not like somebody from my dad's generation grew up there kind of thing. So I go to this store. I'm in this insane asylum. It's been shut down, and I was, like, all freaked out, and I kept thinking about what John had said. And I was just like, you know, Dr. John's got a point, you know, whatever. But I think what I have to do, I think his whole purpose was to teach me that I have to find peace with what I have and use my own positivity as my own guidance. And so I went in, because, I mean, I'm not religious, so I don't have the same comfort that he does in that respect. So I have to find that healing that he gets from there in a different source to make it make sense to me. So essentially what I did was I was thinking about the kind of person that I am, the kind of person that my friends, you know, radiate that I am. And I think to myself, as the person that I am, I'm the kind of person that advocates for the handicapped. I'm the person that advocates for the adverse, the adversities in the world, and people who are going through hardships and the anomalies. And I think I had to suspend myself in my reality for a few minutes. And in my mind, I'm like, all right, for just a moment in time, let's imagine that there really are ghosts. And let's imagine that they actually have the ability to communicate with me personally. I don't think I'm the kind of person they would go, oh, I'm going to be malicious to this person. I think they know I'm the kind of person that would advocate for them while they were alive, and I feel like they would use they would know that they could protect me and use me as a communication source versus, you know, someone to lash out at. And so once I had it set in my mind that I am a good person, I do good things, the kind of people that were suffering there, I would be the kind of person that would try to free them. I think they would know that if we suspended reality and they could communicate with me, I think they would know that about me. So I was like, you know what, if they're going to, if there's anything here and they're going to do anything, they will. But I took, you know, a lot of what Dr. John was saying, and I'm summing up a lot of conversation into a few like bites, but at the end of the day, like, you know, being who you are and being positive and being a good person is what I took from Dr. John, and applying that made me see things from a different perspective, and I was never bothered.
That's great.
I was never absolutely. Yeah, I was never bothered. So.
Now,
but I didn't leave my mind open. I didn't leave my mind open to being negatively impacted. I think that's what I'm – okay, maybe I wasn't explaining it well. Like, I didn't leave my mind in a vulnerable position to be manipulated. Therefore, I –
weren't.
Right. I didn't allow myself to be, you know, succumbed to, you know, to some kind of – haunting situation. Like, I just didn't leave my mind open to that. I left it open to the possibility of helping people. And yeah, so I just didn't leave my mind open to it. I think it's, yeah. Well, I'm going to stop now because I'm rambling.
Okay. Well, now the reason I brought up that story, and I'm glad you finished it the way you did, is that reminds me of one of my favorite TAM stories. And Coach, you're going to remember this one when I'm telling it. Are you ready?
Yeah.
You hope so.
You ready? You ready, Coach?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Is everybody aware that at one time Myrtle Beach was not an integrated beach? There was the White Beach in Surfside Crescent, Myrtle Beach, and all that, and there was the Black Beach in Atlantic Beach. Now, Coach, I know you remember that, don't you?
Sure, then.
And, I mean, that's the way it was. And when you're talking about getting along, you know, can Liz get along in an insane asylum with the ghosts and not be bothered? Or can different races actually get along together in one magnificent beach? And Coach, I think you'll agree with me that Myrtle Beach is an absolutely magnificent place. It really, when it has its ups, Myrtle Beach is the most incredible thing. Now I got to tell you this, Coach, and I got to tell everybody else this. I did something I wasn't supposed to, and I got in a whole heck of a lot of trouble because there was this man and his band playing in Myrtle Beach. I had heard of them, and I had a subscription to Cashbox magazine. And
right.
This man had a number one pop chart, not R&B, number one pop chart single. The single was called California, and the group was called Billy Scott and the Prophets. And I was probably 14 years old. I never got in so much trouble in my life. It turns out Billy Scott and I became great friends. I mean, it was, you know, it was just one of the greatest things that ever happened to me. Is, I mean, I made so many good friends in the beach music business. Charles Pope, of course, Maurice Williams, Billy Scott. I mean, just some of the greatest people. And the fact is, I got to talk to Billy Scott. And he had these two girls that sang backup for him. Those were the Prophets. And I got to talk to one of them. And this is back when I was 14. And this was a long time ago. This was before integration. This was before a lot of people were sold on integration. I'm sad to say this. But I think it's an important story to get out. And I found out when I was hanging out with them, those were the coolest, most famous people I had ever met. And I was in awe. I couldn't believe it. The only reason I got in trouble is because I snuck out of the hotel room and didn't tell my parents where I was going. But I mean, you know, and I hitched a ride, Coach, up to see, there was a place, the beach club. You remember the beach club?
There you go. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. great buddy. I got a story about it. So.
I hitched a ride up there. My father told me that my mother was crying because I was either dead or she was going to kill me. And that point, it didn't matter. She was either going to kill me or she was just distraught because I was dead. And I was up there. Now, there were people from all walks of life. There were some of the richest people in the world listening to Billy Scott and the Prophets. And there were Billy Scott, and they were a black band. They were absolutely, as my first experience, meeting a superstar. And I thought, God, I wish I could hang out with these people for the rest of my life. And so what the Tams did, they were having a hard time.
Pop culture stars in the making.
That was right. You got it, Todd. So what happened was, Coach, if I get the story wrong, tell me. But I think they were having a hard time finding a place to stay because for some reason they didn't have a reservation, and the beach happened to be jam-packed. Is that correct?
You talking about Philly?
No, I'm talking about the Tams. I'm moving on to the Tams
okay,
now.
Well, yeah. Okay. The Tams were the first black group to ever stay in Myrtle Beach. If that's what you get to.
Right, I am, and it was because every place was so packed, and they went to this hotel, and they said, sir, would you mind if we stayed here? And he knew who the Tams were. He said, I would be thrilled. It was an all-white hotel. He said, swim in the pool. Have a great time. And that story, Coach, got out all over America, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah, and back in the days of Atlantic Beach, there was a pavilion there for the white kids, which served to the black beach so they could hear the music.
Well, all I got to say is the Tams, because of their great demeanor, because of how kind they were, because of what gentlemen they were, and because of the way they acted, they quite accidentally were responsible for the peaceful integration of Myrtle Beach. That's a story. Actually, Charles and Otis told me that story. I was, and I wanted to make sure that. I'm sorry. What was that?
I said, and it's a true story. Absolutely.
And yeah, and it was interesting though that I had never heard that story. So I want to make sure that as we do this book, I want to make sure that that story and the memories of that story get put out there. And you know what? I think the Liz Brackett story at the haunted shooting is probably a good add-on to that story because it just shows the right attitude can generally get you everything. Is right. that right, Coach?
Oh, yeah. Talking about the club, John, everybody that was anybody played Beach Club in those days. I'm talking about the Supremes, the Temptations, the Four Tops. And the Tams played it, and they became the number one Beach Club. And Clifford Curry played on the show with them. You remember Clifford, don't you?
Remember who?
Clifford Curry.
Oh, gosh, yes, Clifford Curry.
Clifford told me this story, John, every time I saw him. Clifford was truly one of the greatest gentlemen that's ever been in the music business, one of the most beloved guys ever in the music. Wasn't a great singer. It was a good songwriter. But he had a song called She Shot a Hole in My Soul. And the backside of that, the B-side of that, was We're Gonna Hate Ourselves in the Morning, and which turned into monster hits in the South. Well, he played, and the man running the Beach Club didn't like him. And Clifford was from Knoxville, Tennessee. He told Clifford, he didn't get even give Clifford, and he slept on the floor in the dance room. And, he told him, he said, I'm not paying you. You're through. You're just going back to Knoxville. Clifford said he came in, I don't know if it was Charles or Joe's room crying. Said, what's wrong? He said, man, pay me my money. And Joe, Charles, and Otis went to him and said, you're going to pay this boy if you don't know what's going on. He said, you crazy. You got to go on here and burn this thing down. They said, we're not going on. You pay. And they made him pay him with cash right there on the spot.
Mm.
So, and Clifford, every time I saw him, he passed away now, one of the great guys and a good friend. And Billy was a great friend.
you know, those great R&B stars did a lot for race relations. They really did. And that's one message that I want to get out there, because of who they were and because of the way they acted. They didn't act like some of the kind of junked up entertainers that we have had in the last 20 years. They weren't sitting around, you know, just doing a lot of drugs, just being stupid. They were great people. They helped a lot of people. And I want the world to know that. I think that's a very, very important thing. And they are proof that you judge people by how they act and in no other way. And I think that was really important.
Dr. John, I want to jump in. There's something I've talked about before on the show. We've talked about things being real and people, you know.
I was just about to talk about this. Perfect.
I know we talk about pop culture, you know, pop culture stars, and let's face it, pop culture today is, I'm a jaded individual on that stuff and all that. But we always talk about keeping things real. And Liz is huge being here on the show tonight. She knows we had some conversations, stinking conversations. Even little stuff with humor between the stinking chew store and the doggone and the doggone burger joint. You know what I'm talking about, Liz, right? We were able to have a real conversation, couch some humor on real stuff in that. And so I was going to ask for the show from the coach, hey, give me a real story. And it's like you guys stole the hell out of my thunder with that one, because
I'm sorry.
No, that's a good thing, because it really establishes what we are. It establishes what we are in my mind. Seriously, it's the Liz and I know we don't agree on everything politically. Not just no, but hell's no. But I'll tell you right now, I dare someone try to stop us from hugging each other next time we see each other.
You're damn right. You're losing an arm.
I damn dare anyone. You know, that's the way it is. It's we can absolutely be different, but we revel in the differences as opposed to go ahead, Hunk.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that your differences make me a better person, because it teaches me things I didn't have perspective on. And in the same, I think that the things that I, you know, express to you and the difference of opinion I have, I think that opens your eyes to something you've never seen before. And I think that's what makes it great. It's not because you believe this or don't believe that, or you think that or you don't think this. It's like you're a genuinely good person, and I can carry a conversation. And just because we disagree doesn't mean we can't see past it, learn from it, and continue to be friends. And a lot of people have that hard line now. If you don't agree with me, I'm deleting you on Facebook. And I think that that's an opportunity we could have to learn about other people. And I think that's what makes our relationship so great, Todd, is because you do teach me things about me. And you make me think things in a different perspective sometimes. Like, oh, I never thought about looking at it from that angle, but now I do. It makes me a more well-rounded person in a way that I wasn't before. That's what's missing, I think. But yeah, you're exactly right. And I was actually legitimately right before you started talking. This is exactly what I was going to talk about.
It's about real. Thank you, ma'am. Because it's, you know, we sit there, we recalibrate what's in our little brain housing group. that kind of stuff. And the fact that we're willing to do that. I'm going to use some of that. Liz admits some of this because she hasn't necessarily been on, and I don't know what she's called on some of the shows. But you guys know that for a month and change, I've been talking about the little baby Zeke, the one that was born, had the heart conditions, had surgery last week. I told you I had some more medical issues, stuff coming up. Looks like doing better. Some people stuff out there, because we may be pop culture stars, but tend to say we tend to be real. So baby Zeke is doing pretty good. I thought I'd throw that out there. I mentioned last week about my buddy Greg, his wife. We had some worries about Corona with that stuff. They actually ran through the testing thing yesterday, so we're going to see on them. So we still got worries. So thoughts, prayers, good karma for those that don't
Thank
do the first time. Liz, you
Appreciate
see how that works.
You.
Yeah, no, you get it. No, there's a whole thing about the positive energy. We talked about that in the universe. It's a whole.
It's about respect.
We could create. We could create another tangent. The that
oh God,
and one of my boys, he did his second retirement here late last fall, early last winter, however you want to call it. Gary had heart surgery this morning. So that's another one I want to send some thoughts, prayers, karma to. And, guys, I know, Liz, your mom, I know, you know, we've had some conversations about, you know, some concerns there. So thoughts, prayers, karma that way. Anybody else
Thank
got
you.
Anything on the table? Some particular ones we've got to throw some thoughts, prayers, good karma out about?
Because that's what we like to do at the end of the show. We like to send our great thoughts. I'm going to pick on Coach Dave because I brought him on here. Coach Dave, would you agree and share us a story about how it does? The TAMS brought people together of all races, of all everything. What? Just expand on that just a little bit.
Sure. Beach music is a happy music, and I've seen billionaires and I've seen homeless people dancing in front of the stage, and everybody just loves everybody. There's no looking down on anybody, and the fans were so good about they'd sit down and talk with their fans. You know, a lot of I book a lot of bands, national bands, and that kind of thing. And, as soon as their show's over, they're off the dressing room, won't meet with anybody or anything, but the TAMS would actually sit down and talk to them. And yes, Joe would be more than glad to drink a drink and call him a drink, but they sit there and talk to so much for hours. And they were very humble, still are. They don't look down on anybody. It's just the way it is. It's that type of music. Really, we're all going to be. The beach because of the tag that we got put on us, which has been very good to us because it's kept working ever since 1962. We're on the second, third generation right now. And it's the same thing. You're good to people. You make them happy. I mean, we play a ton of things. You know, just that type of thing. And it's we've never had any racial trouble in any show we've ever had. The darkest black didn't make any difference. We have never. And I've probably seen, I started about 40 years ago and my health gotten bad. I worked my tail off. I taught driver's ed to high school kids and finished up in 2018 getting ready. I was going to be on the road for every show. And then I had diagnosed with AFib and I don't go out there anymore once they're close, but I still book them. But it's always amazed me how much people love them, and they love people. It's no big-headed type deal, you know. And that's the way it ought to be. We toured with Jimmy Buffett. He's the same way. You can believe that or not, but Jimmy recorded a song with Jimmy Lewis in New York. He was so kind to us, and he's just a genuine, he's an old bar singer that made it, and he's never forgotten who he was. He treats everybody good. Everybody at whole organization, he knows that one of my, about the old Grundy Rudy's, and everybody, he knows my first name. And we'd do sound check at 4 o'clock every day, and he'd say, okay, Tams, let's go in. And all these Thundermen would be in there eating with Jimmy and the Tams. And, you know, a lot of those people, they don't have anything to do with those people. They go to the dressing room and eat. But he was very kind to people. You can say what you want to, but to me, that's a huge part of his success, is that he knows how to treat people and be real. And the Tams are the same way. So it's, you know, it was really an honor to be with you.
Oh, that's a great thing to hear. And so,
yeah,
because
say,
really,
on. Absolutely,
that's right.
Spot on.
Now,
yeah,
Dave, birthday boy, Dave Atwell, what have you got to say as we help round up this wonderful evening? If Dave Atwell,
man. Is he muted or did we lose him?
No, I don't think we lost him. No, that's Dave.
Dave.
Coach Dave's there. Todd's there. Is Dave Atwell there?
We are killing it with technical issues. Hold on, there's a text right here. Let's see if it's Dave.
Hey, I'm here. It's called a mute button.
Oh, good. All right, Dave.
Hauling the trash to the curb while I was listening to the stories and didn't want the rumbling of the trash can to be on the show, but like a big dumbass, I can't turn the mute off, so now everybody knows I was hauling trash during the show. So, hey,
that's
behind
okay.
the scenes,
well,
there you go.
I
appreciate
Dave, you were keeping it real, just saying.
Yeah, the things we do while we're on the show, you know. But, no, I think it's wonderful that all of this is being documented and written down and passed on, because I feel the unfortunate thing with the entertainment industry, especially music, beyond, because there's still good films out there, there's still good books out there, that kind of stuff, but the music has taken a horrible turn, and I think one of the big unfortunate parts of it is, you know, I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and there wasn't really a division. It was music, and it didn't matter whether you were, you know, Willie Nelson, the Beastie Boys, Keith Sweat. It didn't matter. Everybody just listened to everybody's stuff, and there was no division. And the music then had something, and I'm going to hit a good Hank Hill here. It had harmony. It had something that you could whistle. And it's amazing now how, you know, the musician side of thing has been kind of pulled to the side. And the art of writing songs that have meaning, the art of putting together different instruments and creating harmony and making songs is gone. Now it's all about getting out a laptop and just making several odd and sometimes repetitive and irritating noises. And the singers, unfortunately, are no longer people who take it seriously. They're what I call the triple crown winners. They can act, they can sing, they can shake it. And, you know, it takes away from the whole experience of a song. So, you know, for all this to be documented and turned into book form and everything, Dr. John and Coach Dave, I think it's a wonderful thing y'all are doing. And sure the Tams deserve it. Absolutely.
Well,
so, yeah.
They do.
John, I'm going to jump in here for a second, buddy.
Please.
Guys, what we're hoping for is having a book release in North Myrtle Beach, and we would love for y'all to be there. All of you.
Oh, man.
We get you a great table. It's one of the top nightclubs on the East Coast. Name of Spanish Galleon. And we'd love for y'all to be there so you can see firsthand. And it is a very high energy type deal. Matter of fact, when you leave, you'll be tired watching them. They never quit dancing the whole time. And it's very entertaining. John, you agree with that?
Absolutely, they will. Well, I'll put them at our table now, because they're my bros. I'm gonna tell you that. So we'll do that.
Well,
we'll have a
down here, John.
Pardon?
Let's get it down here.
We will get them down here.
They'll leave Tams fans, I promise you.
Exactly, and we're looking at doing it sometime in March, because it's going to take us that much time to get all this raft of stories put together, but we're working on it. Dave and I have worked on it three times in the last week, and Diane's been doing the same thing. So anyway, I want to thank, from the soul of pop culture stars, I want to thank, of course, ladies first, Liz. I want to thank Dave. I want to thank Todd. I want to thank Kevin. And most of all, our esteemed guest tonight, who has reminded me of some grand stories about the Tams as we look to add these into the book, the one and only Coach. The man has got more friends than anybody you've ever seen, and boy, people love him. So, Coach, thank you for being with us, and will you come back again soon?
Yes, sir. It's been an honor.
Well, great.
Oh, man.
We're the ones
that are honored, Coach, telling you. Just saying.
Absolutely. I promise you, you won't be disappointed.
Oh, I know. We'll get them there. Well, look, from everybody here to everybody out there, and especially to the coach, thanks a lot. We've had a great Pop Culture Stars. It's been so much fun. And in memoriam, because Liz's phone died and Kevin had a prior engagement, but he was able to make it with us for a little while. Thanks so much. And we'll see you next week on the one, the only, Pop Culture Stars. You guys have a great weekend, okay?
All
stay
right. Y'all take care.
Big hugs, everyone. Big hugs.
Flash day. Good night, Coach Dave. Thank you for being on.
Bye, y'all.
Yes, good question, buddy.
Yeah. Thanks for having